The Tom Woods Show, episode 1761.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, by now you've probably noticed that news about the virus is almost always fact-free hysteria these days. So you need my brand new free ebook, Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About the Lockdown. Go pick it up at wrongaboutlockdown.com. Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. You know what this episode is. It is the debate analysis episode with Lou Rockwell that, like the salivating dogs that you are, you're dying to hear this morning. It's the last one of the season. We've been doing these since 2015, and I've got a bunch of new listeners because of all this COVID stuff. So if you don't know Lou Rockwell, you have been missing out. Lou publishes lourockwell.com. That's lew.rockwell.com. He is the founder and chairman of the Mises Institute, which makes him one of the great benefactors of mankind of all time. And he was the very first chief of staff for Ron Paul. And he is just the consummate debate analyst. So I'm glad to talk to him. Lou, welcome back.
Tom, great to be with you.
All right, let's get into last night. Obviously, this was stronger for Trump than last time. I have some nits to pick for sure, but what was your overall impression?
Well, I thought Trump won, although not by a landslide. And if this were a more normal media environment, Biden, for example, told lie after lie after lie after lie, and he, of course, is confident nobody's going to call him on these things, that nobody in the media is even going to mention it. So if it were, if this were, say, 25 years ago and the media were not quite all so one-sided, then I think he might be in trouble. Trump, I was glad he brought up the corruption business, and I was delighted that the moderator even asked a question about it. So that that was all to the good. On the other hand, Biden, again, lies. I never took any money from a foreign government. How dare you say that? And so I think Biden hurt himself by saying that he was going to transition from oil and get rid of oil entirely. Not a smart thing to say right before the election when he's depending on winning Pennsylvania, for example. And Trump said, I hope everybody in Pennsylvania, Oklahoma and Texas
Ohio.
Is listening to this. Yeah,
yeah, I know. That was one of his best lines. He just nailed that.
Yeah, it was tremendous. And But on the other hand, I didn't think Trump did a great job, even in just the short amount of time he had, explaining that how corrupt Biden was, that he is the center of it, not his son. Of course, more and more information is coming out, media doing its best to make sure nobody learns it. But Biden is, of course, thoroughly corrupt, is on the payroll of many foreign governments. And maybe that's even better than being on the payroll of the U.S. government. I don't know. But he's definitely a crook and a creep in every sense. But I think Biden was so bad, and Trump, you know, was a little bit better. I must say, my favorite thing was right at the end when Biden was asked, well, what would you tell the people who didn't vote for you? And he said, I would tell you that I'm the president of all the Americans, and I care just about as much about the people who didn't vote for me as the people who did vote for me. And I'm going to, in fact, put you all in a free vacation at a re-education camp right after I'm nominated, right after I'm sworn in. He didn't say that, but that's what he meant, of course. So my guess is that nobody believed that sort of typical politician baloney. And so I think Trump is better. And I think the business of having the 2 minutes uninterrupted at the beginning of their sessions was actually a good thing. Of course, the topics were all chosen to benefit Biden by the evil presidential debate commission. As I've made this point before, but when I was a boy, all the debates were run by the League of Women Voters. That's the national debates, local debates, state debates. And they're liberal, of course, but they were fair. I mean, it was an extraordinary difference from the government running the debates. The Republicans, I think, are responsible, although the Democrats certainly helped, to make the debates a government monopoly, and a very bad idea.
Well, in terms of the moderator, the first thing I noticed was Trump made the correct observation that 99.9, it's probably even higher than that, percent of young people recover just mm-hmm. fine from the virus. And I think it's even more. And she jumped in and said, you know, oh, well, you know, the CDC says that kids can get sick and die. Okay, that doesn't in any way challenge what he just said.
No.
He didn't say 100%, no. But it is exceedingly rare. So what is the point of pointing that out? It's exceedingly rare that the kid has a better chance of being struck by lightning on the way to school than dying of COVID. You know, that's sort of relevant. Now, Trump made the mistake of saying something like, and he's not wrong, but it's just, it's too hard to defend in a debate. Something like, we're learning to live with the virus. Mm-hmm. And oh, was Biden ready for that? Because of course, he's just going to answer that with propaganda. Yeah. So now I'm looking on a search engine right now. I typed in learn to live with the virus. Number one response from BBC News, you know, that left-wing outfit, or I beg your pardon, that right-wing outfit, BBC News says, COVID, is it time we learn to live with the virus? That's BBC News. So is that too right-wing for Joe Biden? Then next, Euronews.com. We're going to have to learn to live with virus, says EU health boss. And it just goes on and on and on. Bloomberg in August, COVID-19, virologist urges learn to live with the virus. New York Times, Europe is learning to live with the – I mean, it's over and over and over. There's nothing controversial about that. The point is you cannot expect to eradicate a virus. It's exceptionally rare for that to happen. So you therefore have to learn to live with it in one way or another through treatments or whatever, or it maybe it weakens over time, which seems to be the case. Whatever it is, you obviously need to learn to live with it. And of course, being a politician, Biden jumped on that. And I actually did like, speaking of being a politician, I liked that bit where Biden was, you know, they were talking about China or foreign influence, and then suddenly Biden shifts to talking about, you know, when you're sitting around the dinner table with your family, whatever, and Trump jumps in and says, now, wait a minute. That right there that you just heard is a politician answer. You know, like, Joe, you're just such an innocent little baby talking to us about sitting around the table. Like, I know you were told to say that. It's good. You're not supposed to reveal these secrets, but he did that.
The table in one of his five mansions.
Yes, exactly. He mentioned that he had a lot of houses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, one, I do think there are some good things. Let's talk about some bad things from Trump's point of view. I don't know why, I don't know if they focus group this or what. I don't know why Trump thinks the term socialized medicine is such a scary term to most people. I think a lot of people have dealt with the current healthcare fiasco. They have no love for it. And the idea that somebody might want to try a radical overhaul, I don't think is that distasteful to a lot of Americans. They think, well, I mean, it can't get much worse than what we have now. Am I wrong?
I hope you're wrong. I actually don't know if you're wrong, but there's no question that there are a lot of people. I mean, what is it? 35% of millennials say they want to get rid of capitalism. So they're all for socialized medicine, socialized everything. So I think it's not the scare term that it was in the past.
They started the debate with a discussion about the virus. How do you think Trump did in that?
Well, I thought he didn't do great, but he didn't do terribly. And I thought it was not he didn't have a good answer. He should have had a clear and persuasive answer, and he didn't. I thought that was unfortunate.
That's exactly how I felt, that it could have been worse, but it could have been much better, and it should have been much better.
Yes.
There's no reason Scott Atlas should not be coaching him on this. And even Scott Atlas isn't perfect, but he's way better than anybody else we have mm-hmm. in public life right now. So he should have had, first of all, he should have gone through and said, all right, well, let's look at Joe's plan. He wants to test. He wants to do this. He wants to do that. Well, Joe, that's my plan. I mean, literally, that is my plan. So secondly, if you have some plan, well, I would just leave it at that. First of all, I've done all those things. Those things have been done. Those things have been done all over the world. Now, we're seeing in Italy, they're having a second round, even though, according to the Daily Beast, they use these exact words. Italy is having this second round of the virus, despite the fact that they, and these are their exact words, that they did everything that experts like Dr. Anthony Fauci urged them to do. So, Joe, that's been done, okay? So that would have been an interesting strategy back in April maybe, but everyone's already done that. And now we got to figure out what we're going to do next. But the other thing was they asked him about his opinion on Fauci. And, you know, if you're not listening to the experts, who are you listening to? He's got to have an answer to that. He should have specific names. I mean, at this point, you got to know who Martin Kulldorff and Sunitra Gupta and Jay Bhattacharya are. And you got to have those names off the top of your head and know that they're from Harvard, Oxford, and Stanford, respectively, and say, is that good enough for you people that I'm talking to people from Harvard, Oxford, and Stanford? Or does that not quite meet the media's standards for expertise? Why should an immunologist who may know something about immunology be micromanaging every aspect of our society that's deranged? You know, I mean, he should have some kind of answer like that. It's very disappointing that he didn't.
That would have been a killer answer, so to speak.
Yes, indeed. Well, I'm telling you, I'm here all day. You know, the debates are all over, but I could have been supplying these answers if anybody wanted them. So I thought the Fauci answer was weak. Then also schools. I mean, even the New York Times just released an article saying, what a surprise. In New York, it doesn't seem like schools are a major vector of transmission of the virus. And then The Atlantic just ran an article, again, a couple weeks ago, saying, well, it looks like all the wild predictions of doom were overblown when it came to school. So basically, they're jumping ship on the panic about schools. And you got Joe Biden talking about teachers dying in the schools. The teachers have no higher mortality than anybody else in this society. And Trump didn't have that fact at the ready.
Yeah, you're right. He's uncomfortable with the whole subject of the virus, unfortunately, and he doesn't prepare himself.
Yeah, and the thing is, he boxed himself in a bit first, obviously, by going along with the initial 15-day thing, but then also by insulting Sweden, criticizing them for not locking down. Now what's he going to say? I mean, Trump is not going to say, well, I was wrong about that. That's not happening. So. But the other thing is, the impression that the debate left with me was Biden has a lot of facts at his fingertips, and Trump doesn't have as many. And Biden has memorized a lot of statistics, and Trump hasn't. But then I thought, that's exactly how Hillary versus Trump looked. She had all the precise, rehearsed answers, and he didn't, and he beat her, you know?
Well, it's again, I think he won the debate, not overwhelmingly, but he won it. I think that he's certainly not behind Biden in the swing states. My guess is he may be a little bit ahead, and he may be even more than a little bit ahead after last night. But if only he had prepared himself better, if only he'd had the right advisors, and this, is, of course, not a new thing. This has been true this entire campaign. I think he could have ended everything last night and sent Biden back to his basement, but didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, I thought his strongest was a couple things. One, he kept harping on every time Biden would make a promise. He'd say, Joe, you had 8 years to do this, and you've been in public life for 47. What reason do we have to think you're going to do any of this? You haven't done any of it up to now. And he and Biden would stammer at that. I don't know how they hadn't prepared him with an answer for that. You know Trump's going to say that, so that's ridiculous. And then the other thing that I thought where I thought he was at least okay was on trying to make clear to that, I guess, plurality of Americans who have some remote hope of getting their lives back someday, that if you vote for Joe, you're staying in your house, that that's what's going to happen. You're going to be in your house because the science tells him so. And by the science, he means certain career bureaucrats. He doesn't actually mean what the conclusions that we've obviously seen about the wreckage caused by lockdowns are. And so that was important, but he could have hit that a lot harder and said, you know, look, they keep trying this lockdown stuff and it doesn't do any good all over the world. Doesn't do any good. The curve goes the same way whether you lock down or not. And some of the worst health outcomes have occurred with the lockdowns, and they're causing bad health outcomes because now we have kids contemplating suicide, and we have missed medical procedures, and we have people having strokes not coming into the hospital, for heaven's sake. We have all these problems. And Joe's answer is, we're just going to keep doing that, just a lot more. No. At this point, we're going to protect the people who need to be protected. But obviously, we have to live. I mean, don't you people want to live? I want to live. So he could have been better, but at least there's no misunderstanding which side each one is on. I mean, we know that Biden, what we know about him is that whatever the worst, most destructive policy advice he was given was, that's what he would follow.
And now I noticed that Lori Lightfoot, the mayor of Chicago, has just instituted apparently the strictest lockdown ever in this whole business in Chicago. And she's, of course, a Biden supporter and a commie Democrat. And this is what, and of course, they've not let up in California and in New York and so many other states where they're in control. So it's too bad that Trump didn't talk about that, too.
Yeah, and it's extremely demoralizing. I mean, I really thought, I'm not always right, and one area where I've been wrong is that I thought more Americans had enough of a zest for life that they would seek out the truth about the virus, that they would want the virus to be less threatening than the media says, so they would look around, and sure enough, they would find that their instincts were right and use that to justify going back to living their lives. And instead, I don't know if it's sincere, I don't know if it's a political thing, I don't know if they've been brainwashed and they can't see reality anymore. But apparently the people in these states, they like these governors. They want their livelihoods and their lives are being ruined and their kids' lives are being ruined and their kids aren't getting to do things they should by rights get to do. And they're cheering it. This is insane.
It's, you know, it's quite extraordinary. On the other hand, they've been subject to, you know, they and their fathers and grandfathers have been subject to more than 100 years of communist propaganda. I mean, that the government knows best. You don't know best. Certainly those horrible people in the capitalist sector don't know best. You must listen to the governor and do whatever he says, and that's the only hope. And they've come to believe this stuff. I mean, nobody in California is blaming the wildfires on what's actually causing them, which is, of course, the fact that you can't clear out the brush from the trees in your yard, let alone they don't allow this to happen in the state and federal forests either. And it's just an atrocity that they have these horrendous wildfires every summer. And we're supposed to believe, you know, that, oh, well, this is climate change. Of course, everything is climate change. But it's not. It's government mess up. And there's a reason these things don't happen in the East, where all the land, the forest lands are privately owned, and owners actually take care of their forests, and they don't allow them to burn. But of course, in California, where everything's government, that these sorts of things don't apply. So my guess is, and maybe this is shows something we have to work very hard to overcome, that people have been brainwashed in the public schools, in the media, and it's had apparently a terrible effect, even against their own livelihood, even against their own lives. It's quite extraordinary.
Hey, everybody, let's take a quick break. I want to tell you something very important that's going on in the coming weeks. Obviously, there are plenty of shows you can binge watch on Netflix or Hulu, but throw those in the trash can right now, because several very smart and very successful libertarians, along with a whole bunch of other very successful people, appear in an extraordinary new documentary miniseries called Money Revealed. Last year, people in my private group absolutely raved about this series, and it's fully updated for 2020. 36 self-made millionaires and billionaires explain how they became successful and where they invested their dough once they earned it. And as I say, it features some folks that you and I love, like John Mackey, the CEO of Whole Foods, Patrick Byrne, former CEO of Overstock.com, G. Edward Griffin of The Creature from Jekyll Island, Robert Kiyosaki, author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, a whole bunch of people you're going to enjoy hearing from and learn a lot from. And this is the kind of knowledge we could all stand to have at this time. You can watch the entire series for free as long as you register in advance to watch it. So register in advance. You can watch all 9 episodes for free. Now, this is for everybody listening to me, not just a few of you, every single person listening to me. If you're driving, I want you to pull over, go to tomwoods.com/moneyrevealed, because that's the name of the documentary, tomwoods.com/moneyrevealed, and just sign up so that you can watch the entire thing for free. I cannot tell you how many thank yous I got for turning people onto this series last year, and now it's updated for 2020. Go sign up to watch the whole thing for free at tomwoods.com/moneyrevealed. There was a fairly conventional discussion of the minimum wage, but I thought the way Biden handled it was just the classic progressive worldview that nobody working, you know, one or two jobs should be below the poverty line, or nobody doing so should So all these shoulds and it's unjust and whatever, reality is what it is. Okay, so to say that, so therefore, because I think people should earn such and such dollars for working such and such amount of time, then I'll just force that. I'll just require that that be mm-hmm. the case, as if there are no consequences. And so, of course, Trump tried to say, you're going to throw people out of work. And Biden replied, which is the common reply these days, that there's no evidence that that happens. But if I were to say, the costs endured by every business, let's say lumber, the cost of lumber doubled. And you got a lot of marginal businesses and lumber is a major input for them. Maybe that would lead to them scaling back in some ways. Maybe the marginal companies go out of business. Would Biden deny that if the price of lumber went up, that that would hurt a business? That when your costs go up, it doesn't help, right? Why would costs going up help you? It can't. So what is the thinking here? Now, of course, he's probably in the back of his mind referring to these more recent alleged studies of the minimum wage over the past 20 years that purport to show that it doesn't really have the effects
yes.
that they say. But when you get down deep into these studies, you see the problems. And moreover, there's not one of them that talks about a minimum wage going all the way up to $15 an hour. Not one of those studies talks about practically doubling the minimum wage. Not one. So he's completely, you know, he's just making that stuff up. But I almost feel like it's nitpicking to talk about Joe Biden and his knowledge of the literature on the minimum wage. Seems hardly fair.
No, and of course,
go ahead.
Trump had read a little Rothbard, he could have said that, the minimum wage outlaws work. It outlaws jobs. We're supposed to think that that's a good thing, that people should, it should be illegal to work for anything below the government set the wage. This is not a good thing, especially for young people, for people who are disabled, for people who need training, and maybe their public school hasn't done a good job for them. Can we really think it's a good idea to outlaw jobs?
Right, and I would mention something like, the fact is, very few people actually earn the minimum wage. It's barely over 2% of hourly workers earn the minimum wage, barely over 2%. And even those almost never earn it for more than a year. So, but for that group, being able to earn something at all is what matters. Getting that start is what matters.
Yes.
And they're not going to be stuck in that job forever because the numbers don't back that up. We could say almost nobody earns it now, and they're not going to be earning it in a year from now. But they're not going to earn anything, and they're not going to get on that ladder at all if Joe Biden, by thinking he's helping them, raises it to $15 an hour. If that's such a good idea, Joe, why don't you stop being a cheapskate? You know, we'll make the typical libertarian argument. Why don't you raise it to $1 million an hour? You know, wouldn't that be great? Then everybody would be rich. Do you understand the problem with that now, Joe? Where is our guy who is articulate and quick on his feet, who can smash these people? We're still looking. We're still looking for that guy.
You refuse to run, Tom. That's the problem.
Oh, they wouldn't. The last thing in the world that would be allowed would be me on a debate stage. That's not happening. I would love to coach somebody, though, at some point. I would absolutely love to do that. You and I could sit in a room and get that person up to speed pretty darn fast. You know, I still remember talking, it probably was two or three years ago, I was talking to, or it could have been more recent, it doesn't matter. I was talking to David Stockman, you know, served under Reagan. And did you know that he helped to prep Reagan for the debates? He played Carter in 1980 mm-hmm. and Mondale in 1984 in the mock debates. So I said, what, gosh, well, okay, tell me about this. What was this like? Did you stump Reagan? And he said, well, early on in the prep, we would challenge him in the debate and he would stop and say, all right, what's the answer? Because we had stumped him. But by the end of the week, he knew everything. He was absolutely ready to go. I just thought, oh gosh, I would have killed to have that opportunity. Were there other parts of this that jumped out at you? I thought it was better that there wasn't so much interrupting. There was still plenty of it and plenty of going over time. But did you have any other particular points?
Well, I thought that the moderator interrupted a lot when it seemed like the debate between Biden and Trump was really going in Trump's favor.
Yes, no doubt about that.
And she'd say, now we're on to the next topic. So there was that sort of thing. But I think that, I must say, I was once again slightly surprised by that Biden didn't seem to be the stumble bum that he'd seemed earlier. And I wonder whether this was all a trick by the Democrats too. They didn't give him his medicine or whatever. And so he was forgetting a lot of stuff and making many, many mistakes, even in very short so-called press conferences. And so they got him the medicine for these two debates, and he functioned much better than he was. Maybe this was to make him be underestimated and to let him come back and seem really he is in control. He could be a good president. And of course, he's boring, but that's actually a good thing. You don't want somebody to be too interesting like Trump.
Right. Right. So the, you know, here's the big question. Do you want to make a prediction? I mean, I hate to put you on the spot about, you know, what's going to happen November 3rd.
Well, if I had to make a prediction, I think I would say that Trump is probably going to win, although I think it's going to be just like the last time, a very close election. On the other hand, the Democrats are certainly capable of stealing the election, and we have all these funny deals that are going on as how long people the votes can be counted and all that sort of thing. But my guess is Trump will win. I think just because the middle class is very, very angry, and they have a right to be angry. We have a right to be angry at what's going on, and I think for that reason they're going to support Trump, even though everybody sees him as, how shall I say, an imperfect vehicle. On the other hand, Biden and the people around Biden, and the BLMs and the Antifas, and unfortunately that subject didn't come up last night because Biden always says Antifa is just an idea; it's not a movement. Oh, right. And so I think people are scared about what's happening. I think they're afraid, but they're seeing that people who are not allowed to defend themselves. If you even show your gun while hundreds of trespassers are marching through your yard and threatening to kill you and your wife and your dog, if you show that you have a rifle, they're going to put you in jail for 4 or 5 years. And that's, of course, the way the so-called justice system in this country works. People know it. People are afraid. People are worried about the Second Amendment. Everybody's buying guns at an amazing rate. But, of course, Biden has promised take away our guns. He's just very open about it. That, of course, was not allowed to come up last night. Would have been a nice thing to have happened. But he wants to put Beto in charge and take away everybody's guns, except, of course, the government guns and the guns that protect the all the politicians. I was like Tucker Carlson's suggestion that any politician who says that people's guns should be taken away, his armed guard should be taken away. And they should not be allowed to have armed guards. If he doesn't want other people to be able to be protected by arms, he shouldn't be protected. So it's a nice dream, but it's a good point to make. Biden and all these people are surrounded by armed guards 24/7, but they don't want you to even have a BB gun. That's their attitude. So I think everybody is aware of this who has a gun. Everybody's aware of what's happening. They're aware of the cops are, of course, totally irrelevant. The Supreme Court ruled that really the cops have no duty to protect anybody. That's just they have a duty, if we can call it that, to try to catch the person who killed you. Thanks a lot for that. But of course, most of the time they don't catch anybody. They're pretty much irrelevant. So cops are no good. Can't have our own guns. People are scared, and they're right to be scared. So I think that's all going to play into helping Trump pull it out. Are we going to be better off in 4 years than we are now? You know, that's I don't know. But we certainly, if Biden is in there and the communist part of the U.S., which endorses Biden and is like the ideological heart and soul of this movement, if they're in charge, there's no question we're all going to be in big trouble.
Now, they know the internal polling obviously better than I do. I don't know it at all. But whether he likes it or not, the election is going to be in part a referendum on staying locked in your house.
Yes.
I think in part it is, even though that's a governor policy. Mm-hmm. It's a federalism issue. But all the same, the messaging that's going to come from the White House, plus that wouldn't stop Joe Biden if he wanted to override the governors. He would figure out a way to do it.
Yes.
But I think in a way it is going to be a referendum on that because, yeah, there are a lot of people who it's a referendum on Trump himself and they hate him and they're going to vote for whatever schmuck the establishment serves up to them. But there are, I think, probably a lot of apolitical parents out there who just see it with their own eyes, the effects of all this on their kids. And I think, you know, unless the polling is telling them that that's a total loser, you got to make some kind of an ad, some kind of direct appeal to those people. And, you know, just show all these kids who were just demoralized and the life has been sucked out of them. And a lot of people throw the word selfish around these days, but I'll tell you what, this is pretty darn selfish, what's being done to our kids. And Joe Biden says that he wants to keep on doing that. So, you know, maybe you don't like my Twitter account that much, but you like your kids, and I'm going to make darn sure they have the most normal life they can. And you know for a fact that the Looney Tunes who follow Joe Biden, all you got to do is just look at their states. Look how they're running their states. You want America run like that? You want your kids' lives ruined? Then Joe Biden's your man. I don't see why they don't make an ad like that, you know, unless they've concluded that that's an absolute loser.
I also think it's interesting that the Biden people would, no question, like to get rid of Christian schools. I mean, a lot of them are very open about it. They would like to outlaw Christian schools. They would, in fact, like to outlaw private schools entirely and have everybody forced into the government schools. So they have terrible plans to make our children's lives even worse than they are now. And the parents, of course, do realize this. And they more and more, they're adopting homeschooling as a permanent solution. But for those who can't do that for whatever reason, the fact that the public schools that they're being they continue to be taxed heavily for, by the way, and of course all the teachers and the principals and the janitors and all the rest continue to be highly paid, but while doing nothing, maybe it's just like the government in microcosm, but this can't continue. So either they need to stop taxing us and let us make our own private arrangements, or provide these government schools as bad as they are and. One of the things I think has been a very good thing in this, in the sort of parents' eyes being opened about what's happening to their children, are the parents who've watched what the children are being taught. Transgenderism is great. How dare you criticize it? You know, and they shame children who are not pro-transgender and pro all the rest of the isms that they want to inculcate in kids. And there are some school districts that have tried to make all the parents sign an oath they will not watch what their children are being taught while their children are being taught. Well, you know, what is that? Because they don't want you to see what a great job they're doing. Of course, it's because they're indoctrinating them. They're brainwashing them. The most sickening stuff you can imagine. And this, of course, is all normal. And if you don't believe in it, why something should be done to you? Maybe sent to a re-education camp. So. Parents are more and more aware. Absolutely, Tom, you're exactly right. That, of course, is also a very, very good sign.
Well, let's see where it all goes. But I'm going to miss Scott Atlas. If Trump loses, it's just going to be the Fauci network 24 hours a day. But those doctors are going to have to organize one way or another. Maybe this won't even have to come to pass, so there's no point in speculating on it. But Atlas, at least, is fine. It's so rare to see an actual fighter.
Yeah.
He really is a fighter back
great.
At these
yeah.
people. Because
mm-hmm.
normally people who are not leftists are very apologetic. And, you know, I'm only 12% different from you people. And he says that these people got to be held accountable. And it's the worst public policy decision of all time. Now, I have to say, by the way, before I let you go, that I did not know that Scott Atlas worked on the Mitt Romney campaign. And that actually does bring him down a notch in my estimation. But at the same time, I haven't followed Romney in the Senate. I'm pretty certain that if Romney were president, it would be all Fauci all the time. There'd be no Scott Atlas. Scott Atlas would be out on his rear end. And I think he probably knows that at this point.
Yeah, I'm sure he does know it. But yes, he's doing great. He's speaking the truth. It's not always the truth that you and I might agree with, but
right.
he's speaking the truth as he sees it.
Yeah.
And just tremendous, whereas a guy like Fauci is just a lifelong bureaucrat. And by the way, why is he considered the greatest expert in virology or all these other subjects?
Yeah.
He's a lifetime bureaucrat. He hasn't achieved anything. He hasn't made any contributions to medical science. He's just a lifetime bureaucrat. And of course, he's the highest paid bureaucrat in the federal government. I hope everybody's happy about that.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Well, Lou, thank you. I guess it's going to be a long time before we do. So we'll have to talk about some other topic when you come back on. It's going to be a long time before we do another one of these. But thanks so much. And again, I have to say in particular, thank you for your service for all these, because it does involve sitting through what is a real slog a lot of the time. You know, these debates are, especially those Democratic debates, they are just painful. So thank you very much. It's well worth it. The listeners appreciate it.
Tom, it's great to be with you as always, and you're a star. So you make all your guests look good.
Thanks so much, Lou.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. Well, if you like and appreciate what's going on here at the Tom Woods Show, and if you could use a haven in this giant, insane asylum of a world we live in, well, I've got just the place for you. The Tom Woods Show Elite, entry into which can be found at supportinglisteners.com. Go check that out, because you belong in there with us. It's a great group of folks who will keep you sane and informed at a time when you feel like you're just surrounded by lunatics. So check it out, supportinglisteners.com. That's your homework assignment for the weekend, and I'll see you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.